Good morning. Thank you for tuning in this morning. This week, as you might have heard, we're returning to doing this show daily again, in part because it's our fundraising week. We thought we'd kind of showcase our community connection and get you to thinking about the ways KMXT helps you connect with the community. But more importantly, because no matter how much we would like to think the need for this show is going away, it's just not. We did this show for almost 5 months straight on a daily basis. And then we thought things were sort of dying down a little bit and we were going to return to normal at some time in the near future. And as much as we keep trying, we know we're not there yet and we're still dealing with this pandemic in some fashion virtually every day. It's affecting everybody in our community. So we thought it'd be a great opportunity to bring back some of the people that were on earlier and find out from them how it's affecting them and their organizations and what their projections are going into the future and what their needs are in case there's a need in the community that we can help fill. So that's where we're at. Again, as normal, we'll take questions. If you have one, please call 486-3181. They'll pass it into one of the guests. And you can also use that email address, lowdown@kmxt.org, and we'll see if we can get the questions answered during the show. So this week, we thought we would kick things off with three of the more critical organizations that we have in our community and find out from them how things are going and what's next. Rebecca Shields from the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center. Kep, did I do that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Captain Dave from the Salvation Army and Monty Hover from the Brother Francis Shelter. Thank you all for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Rebecca, you're to the left of me, so I'm going to start with you first. It's been months since you came in.
Yes.
Things were pretty up in the air at that time, but the community seemed to be kind of stepping forward and things looked like maybe they were falling into place a little bit. You kind of had, we're getting a grip on what was starting to happen. How are we doing now?
Well, I think it's really more of the same. I think that last March when we were first here, we were looking at what was coming at us. We were guessing at what was coming at us. We were seeing what was happening in other parts of the country, and it had not yet hit Alaska. And so we did a lot of planning, and we came up with our pandemic policies, and we started basically just trying to figure out what are we going to do. And now we are more in the midst of what we are doing. So in that respect, I'm grateful that we had the time to plan a little bit. At KWRCC, I think our biggest, closest concern is, as it always has been, is how do we safely provide services to the people in the community? And being a shelter during a pandemic, that can be somewhat tricky. So we are still working under our pandemic policies. I think what I'm most proud of is the fact that throughout this so far and from what I see into the future, we are able to provide all of our services that we provide. We just do it differently now. So we have had to think differently. We have set up our shelter so that we can socially distance with the people that are coming to us from the community that need support and need to talk to us firsthand. So we have safe places to do that, lots of PPE. We have three different sections in our shelter itself that are set up for kind of isolation so that as people that come in to stay in the shelter, we can social distance them away from everybody else at the shelter for a period of time until we can make sure that they are testing negative and are not carriers. And then we have kind of a common area. We're always practicing social distancing in the shelter itself to try to maintain as much safety as one can have during a pandemic. We're really trying to provide that for our staff as well as for the clients, both. So staff social distance from each other as well. Masks are always worn. Our staff maintains pandemic policies in and out of work, trying to be as safe as we can be.
What does that mean, outside of work?
Outside of work meaning that, you know, we wear our masks. As a staff, we're committed to wearing masks. We're committed to social distancing. We're committed to not being in populated areas.
So do you have a policy then that works outside the workplace? If the folks that work there, mm-hmm. you're saying if you go out, this is the behavior you need to exhibit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, we do. And I'm really proud to say that with full support of the staff, that there's been no pushback, no one saying, I don't want to do this, because we really recognize that this is to keep them safe as well as keeping the client safe. And when you're running a shelter, safety has to be your main priority. We know that the need for shelter and the need for safety has only gone up in the pandemic. So we really need to stay on our game. And I'm really proud to say that our board and our staff are very supportive going forward with this. The community has been supportive. We did have some things shut down for a while. We had our closed bank shut down, which is now opened up again. So we are running that as well. But we're encouraging the public to call for an appointment because we're just letting people in one at a time.
Are you talking about people that need things or people that are making donations to you?
Well, to come in and use the clothes bank, if you want to come and shop at our clothes bank, then I'm suggesting that you call and make an appointment.
I got you, okay.
But for donations, we are accepting donations, and you just come and ring the doorbell and, you know, leave your stuff, or a staff member will come out and help you, as we always have.
So I remember when this first started, you know, we were dealing with pretty much the unknown and limited supplies. And as I recall, you were having a really hard time at the beginning finding the things that you need to try to make the place safe.
Right.
So you got that all resolved? Are you at a place now where safety, disinfection, that kind of thing is not an issue for you?
Right now, I think that, we recognize that we are in an ongoing battle, that we don't know how long this pandemic is going to be around. And so it's a long road ahead. For right now, there has been some current emergency funding for COVID that was offered when this first got started, which all is going to come up and be completed by December 31st. So that is going away, and I don't imagine that the pandemic will be going away at that point. So that there's a question mark for you. The PPE, currently we're in good supply of it, but we're cautious because, again, we don't know how long this is going to go. I think that where we have really felt everything change is, our fundraising. And with our funding, a large part of our budget is community fundraising and is community support. And we can't get out in the community and sit and have a table and talk to people face-to-face the way that our fundraising has been able to do in the past.
Well, I think that's something common with all four of us, really, is that everybody's going to see the same thing. Monty, we talked about that a little bit before. You're heavily dependent on community fundraising, correct?
We are, yeah.
And are you completely shut down? Have you done any kind of fundraising?
Our fundraising will be kicking in here in just a couple of weeks, the majority of it. we surprisingly had, maybe not surprisingly, because Kodiak has always come through for us, but, you know, this is unusual times, but we had several individuals come through with some sizable donations, and so, but yeah, we have to, you know, in order to keep the doors open, I need to raise about $100,000 a year locally.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, how did you deal with it, Becky? How did you deal with creating a new budget for the upcoming year with so much unknown?
We are working as creatively as we can. virtually has become the new word of the day. Everything is virtual. And we, as some of you might know, we currently have a fundraiser for a new roof because our building, one of our buildings, is in desperate need of a new roof. And we've done that through our Facebook page. We're really trying to get people to like us on Facebook. And we're doing a lot of virtual.
So you're doing a capital campaign as a virtual campaign online? Are there special, what's the incentive? I mean, is it just we need a new roof? Are we doing the song? There's no gaming attached to it?
There's no gaming attached to it at this time. We have ideas that we keep floating around and different types of fundraisers that we could possibly do. It's tricky virtually because most of the stuff that we've relied on, you would do at a bazaar. You would do out in front of Walmart or Safeway.
Right.
And so there's been some real game changers. So... yeah, I think right now we're really just shooting at for the heart of the community to know that we are still here, that we're still working, that we're still doing what we do, and we need the support of our community. So like us on Facebook, like us on to see what we need, because we're going to be trying to talk to the community virtually as much as possible.
What does the Facebook like translate to for you? I mean, what does it mean for you when somebody likes you on Facebook? Wow. How does that affect your bottom line?
Well, it means that they have an avenue to stay in communication with our agency, to see what it is that we are doing, what we're working on, and what our needs are.
Oh, so then...
Yeah.
Okay.
And so most of the things that we are going to be... interfacing with the community, we are going to be announcing and advertising through our Facebook page and often on Friends of Kodiak, and you know, to try to get it out through social media.
You could use KMXT too, you know.
And we do.
Shameless plug.
Yes, true. We count on you guys.
Well, you know, speaking of in front of Walmart and Safeway, let's just get to the king of Walmart and Safeway and talk to you a little bit, Dave. You know, we're approaching bell ringing season, aren't we not?
Yes, we are.
That caused you a lot of trepidation, does it?
Well, I have a saying. I got a big God, little problems.
You got little problems.
That doesn't change my own anxieties. So the corporations are the corporation heads are kind of working that all out. Corporation Safeway, Corporation Walmart, Corporation Salvation Army, they kind of get together and they're trying to figure out how to do those things that we normally do, the bell ringing, the toy gathering, the coat gathering without, and have everybody be safe doing it during the pandemic. So we're all just kind of waiting for what the guidelines are going to be, what the restrictions or possibilities are. So here with Mike at Safeway and Jason at Walmart, those guys are pretty easy to work with. They're willing, they support our community, you know, 100%. So that whole thing about coins, our bell ring is basically coins. You know, when you go buy the red kettle, it was kind of, it's the 10 years, I guess, it's been people don't really carry change anymore.
Yeah.
So that's kind of been a restrictive thing, or kind of hurt us a little bit in fundraising. You just don't have dollars in your pocket anymore. You have a card. So we tried to use the card a couple years ago, or the little slider.
Yeah.
We had one person in a whole season, so we don't do that.
People don't carry dollars anymore, huh?
Well, not like before, right?
I guess the new economy is a credit card or a debit card, but I've not given up carrying a pocket full of money. I don't know.
That's how I function. If it's not in my pocket, I don't have it.
Huh.
So I use credit cards and debit cards.
Yeah. All right, we're jumping down into the weeds. That's into the future. Let's talk to you about what's happened to you since March when you were in before, about, you know, how you made it this far and what your challenges have been.
We closed the store for 2.5 months, like everybody else on the island. And then during that closure, I lost my employees, except for my manager. And then when we finally got the little green check sheet put in the window, it took us a while to get our staff back. So now we have a.
Did you get the same people back?
No.
No.
No. So. You know, it's just like everybody else, struggling to figure out how to open your store, keep everybody safe, go by the policies and restrictions, and you know, work within the boundaries of what they're saying is healthy, and still. The good thing about being shut down for 2.5 months is all our stuff was quarantined.
Yeah, well, that was a perfect time, though, for people in the community who wanted to make. I kept seeing this. Where can we take things to make a contribution to an organization without an outlet to go do it? You know, so I think a lot of things either wound up in the dump or, you know.
Well, we had we kept taking donations even though our store was closed, but we had to depend on. AAA Moving for storage. We had to go to Dan up on Tlaib for storage to put all the donations in. So they were like self-quarantined.
Oh, you did continue to get things.
We took the donations. We just had a closed store.
But then you had no income coming in.
Right. So it's tricky to make things work. But you just got to adapt and roll on. And the donors, you know, they're sitting around. Now they're cleaning out closets, they're cleaning out the garage. So we got a lot of donations, but I didn't have an open store for the outlet.
Right.
So, you know, you get one plus and you get one minus, and then.
So when things started to open up again, did you see a return to normal? Are you back? Are you limited with the amount of people that can go into the store at any time? Are people not willing to come to the store, have you seen just businesses back to where it was?
Well, I think it's better than it was. We had Ken Knowles from Lightfoot Construction came in and built us like a counter screen for the separate the employees and the customers, keep them both healthy.
Right.
Our store isn't like Walmart where we have over 100 people in the store at any one time. We have like 12 at the most. So it's not too, you know, we have the signs up that the city, the borough wants us to put, you know, wear a mask, wash your hands, social, yeah. We got all that. We just don't have huge numbers of people in the store at one time. It's a small thrift store. It doesn't have the room for a lot of people at one time.
Well, is your revenue back up to where it was, though? I mean, is it what you anticipated it to be?
I think because of the generosity of the donors, the stuff, the things that they're donating, and the shoppers, between the donors and the shoppers, I think we're actually doing better than we were before the pandemic. just because we have more donations. People had all summer to clean out the garage, and so things are kind of better than they were in some ways, and a little sketchy in other ways.
Well, you got two other things you're dealing with, too. You have rental units, right?
No, we have a transitional housing.
Transitional housing, right.
So our transitional housing is, it doesn't cost you anything to come in, doesn't cost you anything to leave. But if you're working and you get, you know, the whole idea is to get men and women up on their feet so they're self-supporting. So some people don't really come in with that mindset, so it's tricky. So during the initial pandemic, where everybody was closing things down, we didn't kick anybody out of our housing, but we didn't take anybody new. So there was a couple of months there where we didn't take anybody new just to protect the ones that were already in the program. So when everybody, when everything's kind of lightened up on the island, then we started taking in new residents. So far, everything at the housing has gone well. You know, people come and go, it's transient. So we try to make sure everybody's, do all the basics. Clean up after yourself. Stay away from the others, you know. So
you're saying this with a certain degree of frustration, Dave, like it's been a challenge.
For me, I generally live in my uniform because I'm always out in the public and trying to interact with folks to find out what the needs are and to see if I can help. Well, I pretty much wear my civvies because I'm just not interacting with people. You know, a lot of our ministry is outreach.
Right.
And so all that outreach has been stymied.
You
can't interact. So I'm kind of an extrovert in that area of...
So your ministry is actually suffering the most. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know if it's my ministry that's suffering, but it's my ability to encourage others or to interact with others. A lot of our outreach ministry is to the elders. We have some wonderful youth programs here on the island, but what I see the need for us is working with the elders. Well, the elders are at the top of the
bubble list, yeah, right? So, they're not going to let you in.
Yeah, we're not getting into any of those places. So the positive part of that is I've been able to do a lot of work on our buildings. Because
uh-huh.
I'm not going anywhere. It might as well be productive. So that's kind of a positive. The buildings appreciate it.
Well, Monty, let's talk to you a little bit about what's happening at the Brother Francis shelter. How have things progressed there for the last 6 months?
Well, when this broke out, came really obvious that we were going to have to change pretty much everything. And when you've been plodding along for nearly 30 years, kind of doing doing the same thing, and then all of a sudden everything needs to change. We did a lot of brainstorming with the EOC in the early months. We were probably conversing with them on the phone 3, 4, 5, 6 times a day. And a shout out to them. They were very, very good to work with. They not only had information, but they also listened. And we came and I did a lot of research. And so we had to change a lot of policies and procedures for sleeping people 6 feet apart. Our main men's dorm went from housing 33 souls to 7. And so then how in the world are we going to do this? So one of my crew, Scott, said, how about we break down the dining room after we feed them and sprawl out there? So we just had to change a lot of things and think outside of the box in order to keep people sheltered and keep safety. As Rebecca was saying, safety is the number one issue. We were fortunate that it's always been our policy to have PPE on hand, the masks and the gloves. So we have best quality N95 masks. We had plenty on hand, so we didn't have to scramble for them. We had enough to hold us through until the supply chain became available again, and now we, you know, I buy them by the thousand, quite frankly. We change them every day. We have a mandatory mask policy for the clients and the staff, and I'm thankful to say we haven't had a single pushback from either client or staff, which was good. We give them a no-touch thermometer when they walk in, and for the folks that we're sheltering. And, of course, we have two programs, the homeless prevention as well as the sheltering. And the homeless prevention, we take their temp and have them sign in with a phone number so that if we need to ever do any retracing, that makes it easier. So there was just a lot of changes that came forward, and there still are. I mean, this thing is a long ways from being over. I expect it to be our darkest months ahead, literally and figuratively. One of the things that came up is, so what do you do if when people come in from off island? What do you do when people come in from parts of the island that are hot with COVID? So we give them a night of, we quarantine them for one night, and then we call a taxi for them and drive them through the testing facility, which I can't say enough good about the testing facility. I think we probably had the best testing facility in the entire country. You can get them through there in a day, get the results that afternoon, and they can go into general population. Happens to be on a weekend, which happened a couple of times. We put them in a motel for the weekend, then have them tested, and then bring them into the general population. We had to develop a backup plan with the EOC if the shelter would have a positive, which we've been fortunate we have not had. And then everything changes. You know, we have to quarantine everybody off-site. We had to buy extra equipment like an ozone machine. Instead of cleaning mats, you know, once a week, we clean mats every day. Just a lot of things have changed. We used to feed in a cafeteria style where people would line up shoulder to shoulder, and now we dish the food out into single serving trays and bring them up. The dining hall is 6 feet apart also. So, you know, virtually everything had to change. And it, you know, my staff never missed a day. I asked them to step in front of, you know, one of the scariest things that we've had to, I mean, we've went through pandemics before, started out years ago with the AIDS and then some of the other things that came along. But this one was, I think, probably the scariest one, to ask staff to step in front of not knowing what was going to happen. And, you know, I give them the option they all have vacation coming. I gave them the option of taking some time off if they needed to, and not a one of them took it. They all stepped up. And so we're doing business as usual. They never missed a beat. Our homeless prevention, we never missed a beat. We do try to do as much of that on the telephone as possible, though sometimes people's situations are complicated and they just need a one-on-one to help get things figured out. So, yeah, there was just a lot of change going on. But now we're looking forward to winter and looking forward to what are we going to have to deal with as, I mean, what Alaska was 500 plus yesterday, I guess. Kodiak also has more. I wake up every day, you know, wondering, are we going to wind up with a positive? Am I going to have to kick into action a whole new, another system? And so it's tough to be in the service business right now is the bottom line. Tougher probably for my employees, but also tough just, you know, keeping the juggling going.
So, Monty, maximum capacity for you is 30 some, is that right?
Yeah, we've always had a 35-bed shelter. but now maximum capacity, we would have to, we've never turned anybody away due to capacity, but we would have to get pretty creative if we would get, you know, a large number of people in. Luckily, I guess the there was a few less this summer because the fishing and the cannery work was a little different, and so there was a few less homeless than what there has been in years past. So we were actually pleasantly surprised that we didn't, you know, after overflowing into the dining room, that's all we really had to do, the halls and the dining room. We haven't had to, we have a second floor we can, you know, bottom floor we can overflow into, which we have a plan for that if we would need to.
So, but, I mean, where could you go to if the numbers got to 60, 70 or so, could you accommodate that many people?
Numbers got to 60 or 70, I couldn't. No, yeah. We'd have to, we do have a plan in place with the EOC. EOC acquired the use of the Marion Center. They had it on standby. And so if we wound up, and we can get that back, I happen to be, I'm a Catholic, so I'm involved with that also in the Finance Council, so I kind of have both ends of things. We can get that back and use that if need be. So we have options, and we try to revisit those options. Not the, the biggest mistake we could make is just because we haven't had a positive, rest on our laurels and say, well, you know, this ain't going to happen on Kodiak. But I happened to have been traveling when this thing broke out, and it wasn't going to happen in Missouri until it did. It wasn't going to happen in Arkansas until it blew up, and wasn't going to happen in Iowa, where my family was, until they wound up with, I think, a 43% positive ratio. So I don't for a minute think that it's not going to happen in Kodiak. Do I pray that it doesn't happen in Kodiak? Every night. But I, it's my job to be ready for it if it does.
I'm hoping this isn't following you around, you know? So, well, let's talk about the need for increased services. I mean, it's summertime. That's a bountiful time. There seems like there was a lot of, you know, there's a lot of jobs, and you didn't have the demand for services. From the beginning of the pandemic, though, we heard that we were going to see all these social issues happen, and that in particular, domestic violence was one of those things that we were going to see a serious increase in numbers for. Have we seen that? Is there demand for services at Women's Resource Center directly as a result of what's happening?
There is a demand for services. We are busy. I think that part of the fear, and this is harder to put a finger on, is that as people are more isolated and they are staying at home and they don't have as many outs and ways to reach out for help, that there is going to be a much tougher time for people to access help and to get safe. And I think that there is also that. We're seeing an increase in crisis line calls. We're seeing an increase in other ways that people are reaching out. So as far as safety, yeah, there's definitely, there's been an increase in the severity in violence, in the violent relationships. I think that.
So are you still at the same staff numbers as you were before this started?
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
Is there an extra demand on your staff because of the increase in traffic?
Absolutely. Because we have had to think outside of the box in our approach, especially during this pandemic, we do a lot more services outside of our agency. We have more caseworking, more helping people that are not physically staying in our shelter, and doing safety contacts, safety planning.
So do you do that internally, or are you partnering with other people to help you do that?
Well, both. Internally, we have switched some of our job positions to have more of a community outreach and community engagement. And our agency has always relied on our partnerships and our collaborations. So we work very closely. I work very closely with both of the men in this room. And we have our community collaborations, which is first on the ground approach to domestic violence through our community coordinated response team, as well as we have new collaborations going with working with our behavioral health and substance abuse. So we're definitely all of the above. But we have had to think differently about how some of our job positions are. Instead of waiting for people to come to us, we're having to be much more proactive in terms of how do we get out to them and how do we make what we do more accessible to people.
So, following up on what Monty had just said about how they were protecting not only their staff, but the residents as well, you mentioned about the protocols you've installed for your staff. How do you deal with the people who come into the facility?
So the people that are coming into the facility, we're in a kind of a constant hunker down mode. So those that come in, they typically stay in the shelter if they're living there, and we will escort them and bring them grocery shopping so that they can get out. We bring them on outings. We do a lot more outings now, which is going to have to, we're going to have to be creative once again with the oncoming of winter and different weather. But we're wanting to get people out, but they can't just, they're not leaving and walking about and engaging anymore because of the pandemic. That can be very dangerous. For those people that cannot do that, we have different, we have a spot in the shelter that is more direct in and out so that they're never engaging with the rest of the shelter that is hunkered down. And we also have a little bit of funding to do temporary short-term housing, such as hotels, short-term rentals, yeah. Things like that.
So, Dave, we've got, you know, a lot of businesses shuttered down. There's a lot of people that have already lost their jobs or aren't working or not doing the same kind of thing. Two things for you. Is there more of a demand for help from you for, you know, things from the store and from the drugs and alcohol treatment aspect of things?
That's a good question. We just got through doing our stats for the year. So that's from October, the first half of October last year to the first half of October just now. So in our food bank, we helped over 1,300 families.
1,300 for the whole year?
Yeah, from October to October.
Yeah.
So that averages out about 53 households a month, 115 individuals. The COVID, I haven't actually divided that up to what's happened from, like, say, March to October. It's not how our system works, so those kind of numbers, I'd have to have my wife.
But you see them coming in the door, though, right? I mean,
yeah, the folks are coming in, but, you know, the school district was feeding.
Right.
They had an excellent feeding program, so that relieved the parents great, just knowing they had at least one meal being delivered. That was a huge thing. From where I sit at the food bank watching things, those lunches were, I think, invaluable to the parents for stress as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In our housing, from October to October, we had 44 individuals, 31 men, 13 women.
So during the pandemic, we didn't kick anybody out, but we didn't take anybody in just to, we didn't want to add to the problem. So that's kind of fell to the other organizations for the sheltering. Everybody kind of did their own part, did their own thing, just with the same, not to be contributors, just hunker down and just hold up and see what happens. So I was privileged just to see how all of us were working together and making our referrals back and forth. Like Rebecca says, we work pretty close together. We get food donations from everybody on the island, you know, many resources. So what we do is distribute it to the other nonprofits as well as the individuals and families that come to our food bank. So it just doesn't just sit in our freezer. We distribute it almost as soon as we get it. So
are you seeing a demand increase?
Not yet. I think it will, because you know we got early dividends. There's a lot of people got stimulus monies. A lot of organizations got those federal grants. We didn't get any of that. The Salvation Army here in Kodiak is supported by Kodiak, not by the government. We don't get federal. We don't get any of that. So whatever the individual donors here on the island, the city and the borough give us to work with, that's what we work with. Salvation Army is a corporation.
So for your local budget, though, are you up to where you need to be? How much more do you need to keep you being able to meet the need of the community?
I don't think you've ever heard a nonprofit say we don't need anymore. Right, Monty? So we could always use the support and help, but, you know, our community is pretty supportive to the nonprofits, as well as the city, the borough supporting each of us. So...
Give it a number, though. I mean, for what you really need, I mean, in comparison to prior years, your revenue stream can't be the same as it was before. And if you're not accessing the CARES funds or special funding, are you in the hole? And how much do you really need from people?
I don't have a number, because every year is a struggle for us. Yeah. Our little store is kind of our bread and butter. I only have one full-time employee and two part-time. We don't have a lot of...
overhead.
Not that type of overhead.
Yeah.
We have the three buildings on that one property. You know, each building has an oil tank, lights. There's plenty to keep us going. And then, you know, the folks that donate to our food bank... we have a volunteer in there that she's in there nonstop, that girl. She's been there since day one, since we incorporated the missions part of the food bank into ours. She's been there since day one as a volunteer. We have two other volunteers that they're there almost every day helping. So I'm trying to find a grant to help pay for the volunteer that's doing all the coordinating, all the pickups and stuff, but I'm really having a hard time trying to get that kind of a grant.
Maybe I need to talk to Monty. You think he's the champion of writing grants lately, right? But Monty, how did you budget going into this next year?
So I think everybody's up in the air on that. I think this is one of the reasons that we've always run lean. I think we've always actually been a couple of people shorter than what we should be as far as employees go. But we have a prudent reserve, and this is the reason we have it, is in case, you know, for a rainy day, well, it's raining. As we all know, they weren't able to evict people. A good many of the landlords weren't. That's all coming to a head here in another month or so. And already people are coming in. We've had this homeless prevention program for, yeah, I don't know, 28 years, and we've typically helped about 300 families a year. And typically it takes about $700 is our average to get a family on its feet, keep them from being evicted, turn their, you know, keep their electricity from being turned off. Now they're coming in with massive problems. I mean, it's not unusual to see somebody come in that's $3,000 to $7,000 behind. And so we have been, I did apply for and received a $400,000 grant that we are going to be able to help families with. It kicks in January all the way through May of fiscal year 22. And, but I, you know, whenever you throw that number out there, I want people to keep in mind that that all gets spread out direct assistance to families. There wasn't a dollar in it for operations. So,
wow.
I told my board, the good news is we got quadrupled our ability to help families. The bad news is I didn't get a dollar to figure out how to do it.
Right.
And we're going to have to add at least one staff member.
Hey, so
money will come.
What's the interim plan between now and January, though? If the need is so great right now, what do we do for the 100 families or whatever that are facing this challenge once the rent assistance goes away?
So this is where longevity really pays off. We're blessed with several high-income earners in town that donate to us every year to distribute to families, very generous people. And we also get another grant, a HAP grant, that has some homeless prevention in it. So we are funded for homeless prevention. I did need to wait. We obviously can't spend an entire year's funding in 2 or 3 months and then not have any money after January. So I did have to wait until after I found out if we were going to receive that grant or not. We just found out here, I think, a week ago. And so now we are able to, you know, to help people in a greater way. It takes a great deal of work from my resource specialist, Dana, and a case manager that she has. And yeah, I mean, they're working Saturdays. It just takes a lot of work, working overtime. It takes a lot of work to responsibly help people. We don't throw money out there. We responsibly help people, and there's a huge difference in that.
Well, it's toward the end of the hour here. Let's talk a little bit about what the challenges you see going into the winter are. What's the thing that is going to scare you the most, and what's your biggest challenge kind of going into the dark months?
Well, boy. I think that it's going to be a lot harder for people to get outside. One of the great parts of living in Kodiak that has kept us safe is that we have a lot of beaches that we can all go socially distance on, and it's going to be a little bit harder. It's going to be more challenging to try to find healthy ways and safe ways for people to get out and get a lung full of fresh air. And not go stir crazy. And so I'm worried about the numbers going up just for that as people go inside and how that is going to trickle down. And as far as, I mean, we're heading in, and running a nonprofit is always the same. It's always looking at the next unknown. We're heading into another granting cycle in this next year, and of course our funding is always reliant on how the state is doing and how the borough and how the city is doing. It greatly impacts us, so I'm a little nervous about where we're going to be landing with that. We do have we rely on the community quite a bit for that. I mean, our project income, we're running at just under $100,000 that we need to have, or that we need to raise for the running of the organization. So that's always ongoing.
So that's $100,000 for operational, plus you have the roof.
Plus, right? We have the roof.
That's an addition to it.
And that's an addition to it because, yeah, we need to have our roof over our head so that we can.
So that's an amazing challenge in a pandemic time to have to try and raise that much money.
Yeah.
So I would imagine it's pretty unsteady time for you.
Yeah, plenty to worry about. But, you know, overall, I feel so fortunate to live where we live because we do have a community that is so giving and supportive traditionally. And so I'm very encouraged by that. And I have a staff and a board that is, you know, in it all the way, very committed to the cause. And so we're not going anywhere. We're just one foot in front of the other, and we're going to keep doing what we do.
Thanks. Dave, about?
Well, with Thanksgiving coming up, we really don't do anything specific for Thanksgiving. What we try to do is, instead of competing with other folks that are doing those type of, like, dinners and meals and stuff, what we try to do is support them doing it. Our big thing for us is Christmas. That's our one big fundraiser, is that bell ringing. Last year was the best year we've ever done at the Kodiak Corps. And I think it had to do with the slow coming winter. When it hit hard. But during our bell ringing season, we had wonderful weather. We had a lot of volunteers. It made a big difference. People were out shopping. And so we raised $27,000 last year in the kettles. Best we ever did in 20-plus years at Kodiak.
Do you do social media stuff? I mean, like Becky's faced with, you know, here I'm doing virtual events now. How do you do, if you get to go out with the kettles, is there a way to supplement that? And if you don't get to go do the kettles, I mean, what do you do to replace that revenue?
A big part of what we do during our Christmas campaigns is we do the bell ringing, we do toys and coats for kids. Rotary does the coats for kids, and we give them and distribute them. But we have what they call Rescue Christmas for the online stuff. So Walmart and the Salvation Army they're setting up a registry for good. A registry where those wanting to buy toys for kids in our community may do so online without having to go to Walmart. It is a handoff way of providing opportunities to help those in need in the community. So here's what they do. You go to Walmart website, check on their registry page, then click on Registry for Good. It will ask you the zip code, name of the organization, Salvation Army, and will ask you for the cause. Click on the youth services, and it will give you a list of the Salvation Army options. Pick the Kodiak one and go shopping. That's we're not quite sure what's going to happen locally as far as the angel trees, where they buy the toys and put the. Right. We don't know. We actually haven't got clear instruction on that. But this registry, the good, for the Salvation Army, that's one way we can do raise toys. So the bell ringing, we're not quite sure how that's going to work. I know that Jason at Walmart has one door entrance and one door exit, so instead of being there to greet you, we'll probably have a ringer on the other side. So change is hard, but you have to adapt. And I'm leery, but I'm optimistic. Things are, you know, Kodiak is known for adapting, and you know, we've had a lot of those tsunami warnings, and yet people adapt and overcome. We've been blessed that we haven't actually had that.
Right.
So for me, Christmas could be just my own tsunami, you know.
I'll have Pam come over to your house. So, Monty, what are you looking forward to in the winter? What's your biggest challenges?
So the biggest challenge is that we go into winter, people are going to get, pandemic fatigue and get irritable, and the substance abuse will increase. It does everywhere. And we need to be ever vigilant, not let our guard down. Understand that people are going to be tired and grouchy and not react to that. And then there's going to be a lot of families. That's from the sheltering end of it. Then the other program, there's going to be a lot of families that are in real financial trouble. Was said previously, the permanent fund was spent early. I think that was a really stupid thing to do, put that out early like that. We're already seeing families that are in real trouble that normally use that to pay their rent and to help with Christmas. A lot's going to depend on how the unemployment situation is. If they ever get done fighting in Washington and decide to help families there. So there's just lots of challenges going forward. We'll meet them. We always have. But a lot of ambiguity in the air and having to make a, as Dave said, change. There's just a lot of change, and you have to really think on your feet right now.
Yeah, I got one follow-up to something you mentioned before. You haven't had a case come into the facility yet. What happens if something does? What happens if you get a positive? What happens to the facility then, and what happens to the people that are there to accommodate them while you're shut down?
Big deal. Yep, that's that. You wouldn't believe how many nights sleep I've lost on that one. We have a plan in place with the EOC. It depends on, we would get everybody tested, and it would depend on if we just are fortunate and only had a single positive, we would isolate that person, probably put that person in a motel. And if staff is positive, that gives me a bigger problem. We have to find new staffing in a new location. We would probably overflow into the Marion Center, move to the Marion Center. And so you would just have to be very flexible. I just called the EOC to kind of remind them. They got lots going on. We just had another conversation last week about that exact possibility and sharing information and letting them know my concerns, asking them to bring it up at their weekly meeting, daily meetings, and to let them know that is a distinct possibility. We know what happened in Anchorage at the shelters. Shelters are a great thing for a community, but they also have the ability to create hotspots. And so our goal has been, we've been fortunate so far, that we do not want that to happen. And so the bottom line is, be ever vigilant. Face shields, masks, make sure that people have masks on while they're there. Spatial distancing, lots of bleach and soap, and just don't let your guard down even for a day.
It is a segment of the population that we sort of perceive to be at higher risk for contracting the virus. I mean, is that fair to say? I mean, that seems to be the trend throughout other parts of the country.
Yeah, certainly some of the folks are. Some of them are older. Some of them have weakened immune systems due to substance abuse. It just like there's a lot of people that are more at risk, and that population in general, I'd say, there's a number of them that are at higher risk. We keep an eye on them. One of the things that my staff does that I think has a big impact is they make quality homemade meals, home cooked meals. And so the nutrition is, in many cases, they eat healthier than I do. They get a protein, they get a starch, they get a vegetable, not canned vegetables. We buy good frozen vegetables that are high quality. And I do believe that through the years that has made a huge difference into the, we offer flu shots. We bring people in from clinic to get flu shots, and we really try to talk them into getting a flu shot. And so they are at risk. There's just no doubt about it, and there's no preventing that, but we can do everything we can to not have them positive show up. The main thing is quarantine. When somebody comes in from out of town or off island, in spite of what other kind of things the state has going on, we quarantine. We have that same policy. Even if they come from the other end of the island, where like when them canneries were heated up with COVID, they were, anybody that came in from there was quarantined and tested. Testing is really, really important and a big part of what we do. We pay for the taxi. We don't warm hand off or just say, go get a test. We wait till the taxi gets there. We put them in the taxi. We tell the taxi, drive them through. When they're done, we'll take them, you know, and drop them off wherever they'd like within town. And that's worked really well for us. And then we get the result back that same afternoon. So they can go into the general population that night.
Well, you're in kind of you're in an ideal spot to assess like what the social implications of what's happening now are. I mean, what kind of social issues are you seeing right now that seem to be accelerating, if any? I mean,
I don't know that we have. I would say anxiety. Anxiety is accelerating. Stupidity in the general population. Like, for instance, it's going around that flu shots give you COVID. So try getting people to take a flu shot when some ignorant fool came up with, you know, spreading flu shots give you COVID. So now, you know, I got signs all over the place, and me personally, giving them my word that they are not going to get COVID from a flu shot. They got my word on it. And, just stuff like that, you know. There's no shortage of stupid going on in our country right now, and as you can tell, I get amped up over it, and I try not to, but just trying to work and get people to take care of themselves. I'm very thankful for the fact that the staff nor the clients. I haven't had a single issue with a client, you know, getting stupid about wearing a mask. They wear them. They want services. They have to, I guess, but still they could give us a hard time, but not a single issue that I'm aware of. And they have, you know, sometimes I'll walk through, see a dirty mask. I'll say, you need a clean mask, please. We have them there. Then, you know, again, buy them 1,000 at a time. And, it just dispelling myths and urban myths and that type of thing is probably a more politically correct way to say it. But trying to minimize anxiety. Because if we can just get through a few more months, there'll be a vaccine. There'll be another one there. You know, there'll be another myth trying to get people to take the vaccine. So I'm already looking at that. We're already doing a 2022 budget. Because that's when it's going to get tough financially, you know, when people in our country look at how much money we've spent on this thing, they're going to try to, you know, really hunker down financially, and, you know, the governments are, and, you know, we're still going to need to be in operation. So we're already looking that far out.
Well, that's a good thing. So how are you projecting out 2022 to look?
We're projecting for 2022 to be, I project that the general fund from the community will be fine, but I project that our budgeting from federal, state, and local governments will go down.
Are you still then going to be able, you're budgeting with an eye towards keeping what you're doing and probably increasing, because wouldn't you, it's fair to say, you're doing a lot more now to provide the same amount of services that you were 6 months ago.
Doing a lot more takes a lot more work. I mean, obviously, you know, single serving food, packing all them up, taking them upstairs versus just having people stand in line. It's a lot more work, some more expenses. I'm old, I'm tired, but I can raise money. And that's, you know, quite frankly, one of the big reasons I'm still around is Kodiak in 30 years has never failed us. They've never let us down. And I don't worry about them letting us down. I just worry about me being smart enough to know what I'm going to need in order to meet the needs of the people that depend on us.
Yeah. Well, let's close with what you need. Becky, what do you need from the community to help you do what you do? And
more of the same. Just engagement. Just, again, like us on Facebook so that you can keep in contact with what our needs are, because that's our way of keeping in contact with the community. Kodiak has always been a wonderful place to be because we have such a caring community that does look out for each other. So I think that Monty answered that very well. But you know, please don't forget us, because we're in it for the long haul. And right now we're making it work with, you know, the short-term funding that we had at the very beginning of this, and we don't know what is coming next, and so there could be darker days ahead.
Do you have reserves?
Yes, we do have reserves, and we have been planning for that as well. But we do have a lot of operational expenses as well. Mainly, the most important part of the agency is the staff and the people that work there. They're the ones that are out there doing it every day. And so we've got to maintain our ability to, I mean, we haven't increased our staff, but we're certainly utilizing them a lot more and a lot differently than we have in the past. And so I need to maintain that. I need to maintain our buildings and our capacity.
So in the Monty situation, where, you know, God forbid, the one person on your staff came down with COVID, right, you know, what is your plan then for going forward in that situation? And how do you accommodate the needs of the clients?
So this is why our pandemic policies are in place, and that we are going to maintain them throughout, because our first line of defense is defenses. So part of that policy is that we have our advocates are the frontline workers at the shelter. They say they practice safe distance from each other, from other staff members, as well as clients. We try to practice that and all of the safety practices there. We have our outreach, myself and administrative staff are working from home quite a bit. I go into the office on a limited basis. So the second line, should somebody, excuse me, get sick in the shelter, one of the staff goes down, I've got another line of staff members that have been safe distancing that we could come in and we could step in and run the shelter.
Do you have an alternate facility like Monty does, where if somebody in the facility actually got ill, do you have to close it down like a school for 14 or for 3 days to clean the whole place out?
We would have to close our doors and isolate ourselves from new incoming. The people that are already there and have been exposed. So we would deal with that by getting them to the proper medical treatment and to get them tested and to isolate them and give them a safe place to isolate. So we would essentially have to close down from anybody new coming in until we could adequately clean our place, sanitize, and get back to that. And then we could start back where we are at now, because we're always at a guarded level. But I think that the way that I look at it is toothpaste in the tube and toothpaste out of the tube. We're really trying to keep the toothpaste in the tube by practicing our safety now and being vigilant on it.
Okay. Dave, your last chance. What can the community do to help the Salvation Army?
I think my biggest concern is people will get too far behind on their oil, they'll get too far back on their utilities, and then we can't help them. You have to come in while it's still manageable. We work with donated funds, and we work with funding from the borough and the city for paying utilities and rents and oil. But if you get too far behind, I'm not going to be able to give you $1,500. It doesn't work that way. Once in a while, we can work with other, like Monty at the shelter, some of the churches, we can do a collaboration and pay a large amount, but that's not recommended. If you're getting behind, don't keep, come ask for help. Ask one of us for help before you get too far behind, because once that bill gets too big, nobody can help you, because you have to be able to show that you're going to be all right. You got a next payment coming or something. So if you see yourself getting behind, come in and ask for help before, whether it's oil or utilities or rent. At the Salvation Army, we can't do deposits. So we're not going to be able to directly give you the money, but we can call the company for oil or utilities and we can work it out with them. But don't get so far behind that nobody can help you. It only adds to your own desperation, your own stress level. Just come in and ask for help.
Well, you see, you make it sound though that you have unlimited resources. I mean, you can't give them $1,500, but if the community wanted to help the Salvation Army to deliver services to people, do you need volunteers? Do you need more donations to the store? Do you need money directly from people?
When you donate to the Salvation Army, a lot of times we send out the mail appeal. That's a corporation thing. But here locally, if you want to help us build up a reserve for people that need oil, then put that on the check, for oil, Salvation Army oil, or whatever. Identify your donation.
And to give it to you or to give it to the national corporation?
I say bring it into Major Lola and tell her what you want to do and have it
okay
identified for the purpose. I think people feel better about it, bringing it in locally so we can use it locally. The thing about white mail, the mail appeal, is we have what they call centralized accounting. It'll say Virginia or Long Beach or wherever the accountant is. That's where that mail check goes to, but it goes to the Kodiak core account. It's all centralized accounting. But a lot of people don't like to do that because they see a outside address. They don't want to do that, but it's done by bookkeepers that have an accounting system.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm asking you, Dave, is how much do you need in that local account to be able to accommodate the needs that you're seeing from people in the community now? I mean, is there a $25,000 hole? Do you need $50,000 more to be able to meet the demand that you're going to see coming in the next couple of months?
Mike, I honestly don't know how to put a number on that, because if people are wise, maybe they save their dividends for such an occasion. I don't know what people are doing. I honestly just don't. What I know is this is how we operate. This is how we try to meet the need. So one of our big pressures right now is we have a volunteer doing our food bank coordinating. we're trying to get some kind of a grant, some kind of local support where we can pay that individual to put her on staff. So, you know, how do you ask for $30,000 so you can pay for an employee? $30,000 for a year's wages, that's not very high wages.
No.
And she works pretty hard. And right now she's just volunteering and still doing all that work. So, you know, I don't know how to identify that kind of thing. Our community gives us kind of what we need as we go along. Like Monty said, we're always on a shoestring. Even in good years, it just means we're just not stressed.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean we have an abundance. It just means we're not stressed. So the pandemic just complicates everything. I'm a little concerned about our bell ringing because that's all contact, you know, dollars and coming.
Where does the bell ringing money go? Does it go directly into your budget and then you funnel it to a specific need?
We're a church, so we have a tithing principle. 10% of anything we get, we make, goes to our divisional headquarters, which goes up the ladder. So that 90% stays here in our Kodiak account. We pay our local bills. We do our ministry, run our vehicles. All that stays right here. So if you're making a donation to the food bank, you identify it for food bank. If you're for the church purpose, identify as the core church purpose. Housing, just identify it.
Yeah. So, I mean, in a normal year, then you would sort of budget and say, yeah, we've got these normal expenses and $20,000 of it is going to come from the bell ringing portion of fundraising. And now you're looking at, well, I don't know if we're going to have $20,000 from our bell ringing budget this year. Where is it going to come from?
Yeah. I just don't have answers for unknown things.
Well,
we have how we normally operate. We have goals that we shoot for. All that's kind of at a wash right now. What we have is we're going from a summer thing to a winter thing. That's a whole nother, that fuel oils, all those costs go up. Like she was saying, you know, in the summertime, everybody's on the beach. There's natural distancing. Now we don't have that.
Right.
So that means more expensive, more eating, more oil, more lights. It's just more expensive.
Yeah. Monty, how about you? How can the community help you?
Well, keep in mind that as David was talking about helping the families that are going to be in trouble or are in trouble, if people want to make a donation to them families and they want to see 100% of their dollar go towards helping that family or a family, the families, depending on how much it is, we always have a pact with them that if they make a donation and signify it for homeless prevention, 100% of that will go towards homeless prevention. I'll come up with the administration funding from other sources. So that's worked really well for us, especially for high income donors for large donations. Well, you know, keep in mind 90%, probably not, that's just a guess, but I'd say 90% of the homeless prevention help in Kodiak comes from the Brother Francis Shelter. So it does take a lot of funding. We do have that funding coming in after the first of the year, but it won't cover everybody. There's time doesn't allow us to talk about how some instances aren't covered. There's families that live two families together. There's Kodiak has, you know, people just making do that sometimes they don't qualify for federal funding. And so we need, you know, general funding for that. I also need general funding to keep the doors open. As we send out our appeal and our newsletters, I hope people keep that in mind that in many cases, there's funding there to build stuff or to buy stuff, but there's no funding there for operations. That's always the toughest funding to come up with. And so I would keep, you know, I would keep my promise this year, the same as every year, is that we will spend it wisely. Mm-hmm. If they want to give money to Brother Francis Shelter to keep our doors open, I promise that we'll spend it wisely. And that's the best I can do. But as far as what they can do as a community, please listen to the EOC. Mask up. Take care of yourselves. Don't get too hungry, too angry, too lonely, too tired. Just take care of yourselves so that as a community we stay healthy. That's going to be the most important thing about getting through this winter. And also, one last thing, shout out to my staff, Scott, Dana, the night guys. They've stepped in front of this thing every day since it happened, and I want them to know that, you know, I probably don't say it enough to them. I really appreciate all they've done.
Thank you, Monty. Thank you, Rebecca. Thank you, Dave.
Thanks, Mike.
It's been an interesting conversation. I hope you learned a little bit by listening to us. And if you have the means to help support one of these organizations or to do something positive, I urge you to keep their words in mind and act accordingly. It's going to be a long winter, and with good people like you leading the way in our community, I think we're a better place for it, and it's a little bit brighter than it sometimes may appear. Thanks for being with us this morning. Thanks for tuning into the Lowdown. You all have a pleasant day and a pleasant week, and good luck.
Thank you, Michael, for your time.
All right, good luck to you. Thank you so much.